got some Allied war heroes that I believe you're going to talk about today, Dennis. The British Free Corps, is that right?
Yes. Found some more information about these guys. Obviously, I used John Amery as a avatar. So I thought, you know, it would be interesting to a little bit more deeper because there's a lot of secrecy about it. And it's just to a little bit more light on it. And I hope people enjoy it. Obviously, men joined the ranks of the SS from most of the European countries, especially after the preemptive strike on Bolshevik-occupied Russia and the Fuhrer's much-publicized crusade against Bolshevism. There is a number of people in Britain who knew about it. And again, you know, any figures have been kept well down. Any volunteers signed up for a 2-year term with German citizenship granted at the end of their service. And over 1 million non-German nationals enlisted in the SS throughout Europe. The volunteers came from Holland, Belgium, Denmark, Norway, Switzerland, Finland, Croatia, Ukraine, Latvia, Hungary, Spain, Sweden, and many other ethnic groups, including the White Russians and the Cossacks. Well, one seldom mentioned the band of volunteers that were formed from the British, known as the British Free Corps, the BFC. This was the brainchild of John Amery, who was the eldest son of the Secretary of India of British government. His father, the Right Honourable Leopold Amery, MP. John Amery had fought against communism in the Spanish Civil War, where he gained Spanish citizenship. After the conflict, he moved to France and subsequently to Germany in 1942, from where he broadcast radio messages to Britain calling for peace between Britain and Germany. And I'd like to remind everybody at this point that Adolf Hitler was the only leader in the World War II to call for peace. None of the Allied leaders even considered it. Amery founded firstly the League of St. George, which was to be a non-combat unit made of British prisoners of war to spread the National Socialist message to fellow prisoners of war, this alternative to this Jewish financial system, which keeps us all locked down as we know today. When the Wehrmacht High Command insisted on the Legion being a combat unit, then John Amery formed an offshoot, the British Anti-Bolshevik League, aptly named, I think. And January 1944, the 1st of January, the BFC was officially formed with the out of these two groups, and the volunteers signed a pledge which read, "I, Joe Bloggs, being a British subject, consider it my duty to offer my services to the common European struggle against communism and hereby apply to enlist in the British Free Corps." Interestingly, before the BFC came into being, a number of British volunteers had already fought in some of the SS units, the Totenkopf, May 1940. Waffen SS Manpower Reports mentions British volunteers serving in both the Totenkopf and the Standarten units. Many writers hostile to the BFC have claimed in the past its members never actually saw active service, but this is an out-and-out lie. Reproduced in a full letter from Anthony Bears, who lived in Surrey, and was printed in the Daily Express, and the letter read, "Anthony Beevor, inside Hitler's concrete tomb last week, mentions the foreign SS troops who helped to defend Berlin. Among them were soldiers of the British Free Corps who were released from prisoners of war camps in return for donning German SS uniforms, with the understanding that they would be asked to fight, be asked to fight their own countrymen. As a national serviceman stationed in Berlin, I met a Russian Red Army officer who was impressed by the fighting spirit of 8 misguided British soldiers he came across. They'd held up an entire Russian regiment for almost 2 days until they ran out of ammunition. Only 2 survived to surrender and were promptly shot by the understandably irritated Russians, or should we say Soviets, who had lost almost 100 men and 3 tanks. The Russian officer said that the unit, especially a soldier identified only as Mr. Bleed. Had they been fighting the Germans, they would have deserved the Victoria Cross. He told me, I hope the British invented a good story for their families. For as brave a soldier is, still a brave soldier, even when a traitor to his country. Soldier Reginald Cornfield is thought to be the only British Free Corps member to be killed in action. On the 27th of May 1945, during the Battle of Berlin, Cornfield disabled a Soviet tank with a Panzerfaust. The tank crew then tracked him down, shot him dead. And due to this unusual BFC uniform, his identity book was taken and kept by a Soviet officer. Nothing else is recorded of the soldier named Bleed. John Amery's book, England and Europe, was distributed to British prisoners of war from the 21st of April, 1943, in the hope that they would join the Legion of St. George. Many of these British soldiers were kept in the dark for the real truth about World War II. And this probably went a long way for at least some soldiers to understand. The book was vehemently anti-communist. The unique work details such things as what happened to the general population of countries when communism, or rather Bolshevism, takes over. Who instigated the war, and who was likely to profit from such a war. England and Europe also warns, the book England and Europe, of course, also warns that Britain could lose her empire, in fact would lose her empire, to the benefit of both the Soviets and the USA. And one of the first two volunteers was, one of the first to volunteer was a guy called Frank Wood. You've got to understand that a lot of these names were fake, many pseudonyms, and obviously for repercussions after it probably was a good thing. And this Frank Wood drafted a recruitment leaflet for the BFC, which was dropped by the Luftwaffe to the British frontline troops fighting in Italy. The leaflet reads as follows. Fellow countrymen, we of the British Free Corps are fighting for you. We are fighting with the best of Europe's youth to preserve our European civilization, our common cultural heritage from this menace of Jewish communism. Make no mistake about it. Europe does include England. Should Soviet Russia ever overcome Germany and other European countries fighting with her, nothing on this earth will save the continent from communism, and our own country sooner or later would eventually succumb. We are British. We love England and all it stands for. Most of us have fought on the battlefields of France, of Libya, Greece, and of Italy, and many of our best comrades in arms are lying there, sacrificed in this war of Jewish revenge. We felt then that we were being lied to and betrayed. Now we know it for certain. This conflict between England and Germany is racial suicide. We must unite, take up arms against this common enemy. We ask you to join with us in our struggle. We ask you to come into our ranks, fight shoulder to shoulder with us for Europe and for England. Published by the British Free Corps. Which was quite a heartfelt plea, would have obviously fallen a lot of deaf ears because of the propaganda circulated in this country. But nonetheless, it was a true heartfelt plea.
Yeah, I would have just said, was just going to say, I bet most of the people were just blockheads and didn't pay too much attention to it. You know, they were too busy singing these ridiculous songs about Hitler only having one ball and things like that. Yeah, you know, I think most of the British people at the time wouldn't pay any attention to what was being said. You know, you had Oswald Mosley speaking out against it, William Joyce speaking out against it, lots of people speaking out against the war, but people just didn't take any notice. And how could they call those brave boys traitors? When you listen to that oath that they took, the oath to defend Europe against communism with other European youth, there's nothing in that that says we pledge to fight for Germany or we pledge to fight against Britain. It's purely and simply to fight against communism. Now this was the same thing with the Latvian Legion. All they fought against were the communists, the advancing Bolshevik hordes. And they were actually absolved of of being a part of the SS or fighting against the Allies. They were absolved of that. So why were the British Free Corps not absolved of fighting against the Allies when their oath specifically states that they're only going to be fighting against communism? And you've also got the Germans confirming that, that no way would these British fighters be asked to fight against Britain, which they clearly wouldn't do. And there's very little about this that's available. I'd like to read John Amery's book. Do you know if that's available online at all, Dennis?
I don't actually know. I mean, that is a good one because, like I said, a lot of it is shrouded in mystery. Nothing really is ever put out which is favourable to people who fight for the Third Reich. So you don't even know what's been said. What little has been said is true anyway. So, yeah, you're right. And that's maybe a quick look around the internet will find that book, yeah.
And I mean, there must have been trustworthy as well. I mean, this shows you that National Socialism was based on the truth, because the prisoners of war, the British prisoners of war, they would give them this information, and then if they agreed to fight for the British Free Corps, then they would free them. Basically, they would trust them not to to attack Germany on the side of Britain. They would trust them. Did anything like that happen in Britain? Did Britain take German prisoners of war and convince the Germans that Britain's way was right and that the Germans should be fighting on the Britain's side? I don't think they did. And if they did, there's no way they would have trusted the Germans, because there was no real ideology that Britain was fighting for. I mean, what do they say? They're fighting to preserve democracy. Hitler was put in power by a vote. He had the support of popular support of 90% of the country. 99% in Austria supported the merging of Austria and Germany. So how could they say they were fighting to preserve democracy when Churchill hadn't been put in power through a democratic vote? He'd just been appointed as the prime minister for the war. At the end of the war, he wasn't voted in. The people voted against him, as it were. And yet today, we've now got new plastic £5 notes with this traitor Churchill on the back that destroyed half of Europe and lost us the British Empire. And he also shot Welsh miners. You know, we've just got this fat traitor on the back of our £5 notes. I would suggest that that's a good chance for people to bring up this subject when they get handed a £5 note. Bring up the subject that why is Churchill on the back there when he destroyed half of Europe and lost us our empire?
Yeah, and a big fan of Krudenov Kalergi, of course.
Yeah, obviously you can go into more details, and apparently he used to wear women's underwear. He was drunk all the time. He was a coward. He wouldn't stay in London. He goaded Hitler into sending an air force into Britain, and then made certain that he wasn't there in London and pretended that he was there. You know, I mean, the guy was just despicable when you think about it. And he's put forward as a British hero.
Yeah, well, like I said early on, a lot of things rankle me, and that is another one. I mean, I know people who, you know, have said to me, Churchill would never let this happen to me, and if they only knew. But, you know, such is life. Who said life is fair? I'll tell you what is interesting, though. These guys were pretty clued up about the racial facts of it all. And, you know, the little line there, this conflict between England and Germany is racial suicide. Because Krudenov Kalergi looked on, and of course saw the Freemasons and the Jews also, look on this northern part of Europe, which dominated by this, you know, the white races, the Anglo-Saxon, the Aryan. And he looked at them, actually. I saw some information on him recently, that they were just barbaric with no culture. Any culture that they ever did have, they stole from the southern tribes, the races. And so Churchill was very much of this opinion that the white race must end. And these soldiers are actually aware of this racial conflict. I'm not sure that many in Britain were, because when Hitler would turn around and say he'd never wanted to fight the British, he let 300,000 go at Dunkirk. These were Anglo-Saxons. He didn't want to kill unnecessarily. And this is all a loop. These guys were pretty clued up, I think.
Well, he knew that as you say, knew that we were their racial brothers. I mean, if you look back in the oldest chronicle that we have, the Chronicles of England, which go back before the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, and that tells us that we came from Brutus, who was a Trojan. So the British people, that's what the Trojans look like. And you can take it, you can go on from there to the expansion of the tribes and the migration of the tribes. You've got this tribe that became the Cymry, and they went to Denmark, Daneland. They became the Norsemen. They also became the Anglo-Saxons, and they were also in Helvetia in Switzerland, Schmidt's part of the world. And they were all the same people, even when they came back as Normans into Britain. It was this same racial group, Nordic looking, maybe with darker hair, but they were the original ones that were in Asia Minor, in the Phoenician civilization and the Trojan civilization, the really early ones, sort of going back 3,000-4,000 years, maybe before that. And these migrations, they were the same people. It was just over a spread of time that the language changed. Obviously, you would get a particular look to these people, where the just by selective breeding, they would look slightly different, but they were essentially all the same race. And the whole of Northern Europe was essentially the same race. And the Germans realized this. Obviously, the British Free Corps realized this as well through their propaganda there.
Well, I think it goes even further. I'm sure you'll agree that not just the looks of that race, but the actual feelings of that race, because whereas, you know, the Jew wakes up every day and thinks, how can I cheat, you know, my fellow guy? You know, the white race wasn't of that mentality. They're quite compassionate. Even in Christianity, help thy neighbor. And so even, you know, the actual things they thought and how they went about things is totally different than these people that the British Army were conned, know the word, into fighting for. Amazing, really.
Well, yeah, the racial soul is different for all the different races. I mean, you'd have to be pretty mad to think that if something looks different, it's going to be exactly the same. Form and function are intimately connected. So if one object looks different to another object, then its function is going to be different to another object. And if you've got one race that looks completely different from another race, it's going to think differently, it's going to act differently. You know, our body language is going to be different. Our ways of treating people courteously are going to be different. I mean, British people are known to always queue. And then you've got others like Africans who will always push in front in the queue. They have no tradition of queuing. It's always, you know, if you can barge your way to the front first, then do that. You've got totally different set of manners and courtesy, which just causes problems when you mix the two together. I mean, diversity has caused nothing but trouble and strife throughout all history. We have to separate, and we have to keep ourselves segregated from these other races for their good and for ours, like we were discussing at the beginning of the podcast, Dennis.